and Issues, a podcast where we do in-depth discussions on a single comic book. I'm your host, Jonah Gregory, and your next line is, and I'm Karen Bennett.
And I'm Karen. Oh!
Oh,
you got me! My name is Karen, and why am I cursed to never look cool?
And today we have a special guest with us, joining the show proper for the first time, is Jennifer Cheek.
Hey, everyone. I would love personally to get kicked by Joseph Joestar into space, where I will float forever until I never die.
That sounds like fucking paradise, man. Yeah.
Just alone with your thoughts for all eternity.
As long as I could bring my crochet with me to space, I think it's all right. And I have infinite thread. I've just started crocheting. I'm very into it now.
Nice. So today we're going to be talking about JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, specifically part two, Battle Tendency. We had to pick a single part because there's just too much JoJo's. And this way we get to come back to it later.
There's so much JoJo's and there's a lot of it that's not officially translated into English yet.
That is true. So we picked one that people could actually go out and buy if they wanted to. We skipped part one partially because it's a little slower.
It's lame.
It's not quite as good. It's not as bizarre.
And he's finding himself. He starts to really get into the swing of it by Battle Tendency.
Right. But Battle Tendency is like so much better. It's where it really kicks off. But it is still a little bit before. It's one arc before the stuff most people are familiar with, like the stands and whatnot.
Right.
So it's kind of a good one to cover because I think a lot of people were told, oh, just skip to three when that anime came out.
Right. And it's like, actually, you should definitely watch Battle Tendency.
Yeah, you should definitely watch Battle Tendency.
Slash read Battle Tendency. Good. Also very good.
Because what Kieran and I decided was until part four started, two was our favorite, and now four is the anime's out. So now we're like, now it's getting harder to decide what my favorite is.
They're all too good.
Welcome to the world of JoJo. You'll never leave now. That's how it is.
And people that have been following me on Twitter probably know that I've been screaming about people watching the show since they started showing it on Crunchyroll. So it's been a few years that I've been on there trying to get everyone into it. I finally convinced a coworker that I've known even before we worked together, like since we were teenagers, and he is the biggest anime fan, and he still has not watched or read any of it.
I think that people are really intimidated by it because it's just such a, I don't know, like a force in
such
like
a bizarre
anime.
Concept.
Like it is truly extremely weird. Like I think it's one of those things that, like, for me, I watched the first episode and was immediately like, "Yep, I'm in. Love this."
Yeah, same.
But same. It's really weird.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's the guy that's like my, he's been just giving me stacks of One Piece mangas. Like, he has
okay,
them
so he's
all.
He's got staying power.
Peace.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, he's my dealer. Like, if I need an old show that doesn't exist anywhere, he can find it. He has the dark web.
I might need to talk to him again. I need a lot of Legends of the Galactic Heroes, please.
Yeah, he's like, oh, Dirty Pair that's been out of print for 10 years. Here you go. I'm like, how did you get this?
He's like, don't.
I'll tell you, but I will have to kill you. Lim's the rules.
So before we get into this proper, though, Jennifer, why don't you tell us a little bit about your history with like comics and manga? Like, are you, and I know you're a regular manga reader now, but
I'm not a huge manga and comics. I've really never read like comic books like
American
all,
comic to books.
No, you're American comic to books. I've not read much of. I think that I think Tim bought me like Saga, and I read a few editions. Is that no? See, I don't even know what the words are.
A few trades.
You know what? You can call them whatever the fuck you want. I don't care.
It's not that I don't like comics. I was talking to Kieran about this. Like, I think because I read really quickly, and I like buy a comic book, and then I'm like, I just read that in like 10 minutes and now I'm done.
Yeah, that's a problem.
So I feel like comics and manga are a very expensive hobby to get into. And they're not great if you live in a tiny city apartment. So I have not been a huge collector of comics and manga, I'll say that. But I got into anime like five-ish years ago. And I have started to amass more of a manga collection now.
Was there one that like got you into it specifically that really
so,
hook.
So actually, the first manga I ever bought was Attack on Titan.
Okay.
Like a real, like, basic bitch. You. Is it okay if I curse?
Yeah, you can curse.
Okay, good.
Yeah, you can curse.
I feel like we were gonna, like,
okay, so here's a little behind the curtains. We were gonna, I in my head was like, it'll be like a family show, and I didn't really know Kieran that well in episode.
Oh,
we
yeah,
were
that's
casually
right.
dropping so many swears, and I'm just like, okay, I guess we're just gonna mark this explicit then.
Okay.
And that's so nice. I've never looked back. It's
okay,
fine.
Good. So I was a basic bitch and I watched Attack on Titan and I was like, I wanna know what happens next. And so I bought a bunch of the manga. And then I was like, wait, I can buy more manga. And Tim got me the entire set of Full Metal Alchemist for Christmas a few years ago. Which is wonderful. Yeah. And now, man, what do I have? So I've got Monster. I've started collecting Delicious in Dungeon and Golden Kamuy.
Oh, Delicious in Dungeon is very good.
Which I haven't read yet. Like, I have it. It's like on my shelf and I haven't freaking read it. I have some Tokyo Ghoul.
Oh, yeah.
I hear that's good.
I
really enjoyed Tokyo Ghoul. That's like one of the few manga that I've read, like, all of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I probably got some more stuff over there that I can't quite see from my desk. But I think that now, Kieran and I were also talking about this before we started recording. Apparently, Shonen Jump, you're going to be able to like subscribe and like read current. So that I'm probably going to read a lot more stuff now.
I was going to say, we don't normally do news, but like by the time this episode comes out, I think that will officially be live because it comes out on the 17th.
Because I want to read My Hero Academia.
Yeah, like, me too. Because really that is a huge blind spot for me. And like what's currently super popular is I've seen like when there was only like two episodes out, I watched those two episodes and was like, oh, yeah, that was pretty good. And then it's one of those things where I turn around and there's like three seasons of it all of a sudden. I'm like, what happened? Where was
I? And I'll say with that one too, like sorry, I'm like veering off the topic of JoJo, but the first nine episodes of My Hero Academia, you're like, that's pretty good.
You're fine.
It's like a shonen. And then it gets really good at the end of the season. So you just got to you got to push forward.
Nice. Yeah. Okay. I was going to say a minute ago when you were talking about Tokyo Ghoul, that is, I often, when we review something and we don't cover like the entire thing because there's so much of it, I'm like, oh yeah, I want to read more. And a lot of times because of, you know, the schedule with the show and everything, it's like I don't get a chance to. That one I actually went out to the library because my library, you know, a lot of them carry manga and stuff now.
Yeah.
So I went and actually checked out like the rest of it and read it like in a week.
It's really intense. If you like gore, then that's your shit.
Yeah, that's one of those things where it has to be, I don't know, it tastefully done. I don't even know how you'd say it.
It's something.
I think it served the plot.
It wasn't just there to be gross. I think that was the difference there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would agree with that. Anyway.
For
so that's
more
my
expanded
general
version of our thoughts on Tokyo Ghoul, go listen to our episode.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Another manga that I have chunks of, I forgot about. Speaking of perhaps not tastefully done gore, is Berserk.
Yeah.
Which I also have chunks of. A controversial series.
That's another one I have a blind spot for, but I've heard it's good, but you have to go in knowing a few things. Mm-hmm. Like there's some trigger warnings involved for sure.
Yep. So. Extremely.
So how did you hear about JoJo's originally?
So I feel like JoJo's is one of those things that I just saw people talking about on Twitter and I'm like, what is this? And somebody posted a picture of Dio and I said to them, who's that? He looks mean and pretty. And they were like, let me tell you about JoJo. And I was like, all right. I think I was just like at home by myself. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to try this out. And I watched the first episode on Crunchyroll I don't even remember. And immediately, like, when all the weird, like, color changing, like, dramatic stuff happened, I was like, I'm sold. I'm into this. So then I watched, at that point, like, which all up through Stardust Crusaders because that's all that was out. And then, like, I think I finished Stardust Crusaders like in the summer and Diamonds Unbreakable started coming out in the fall. And I was like, hell
oh, wow.
Yes.
That's
yeah,
good timing.
So it was like very good timing. So I didn't have to wait super long. But now, and then between that time, I might have read some unofficially translated things on the net because they don't exist officially. I'm sorry. Yeah. I think it's a little bit different when they don't exist like
that's
legally.
Fair. Oh, yeah, yeah. When you can't actually get them.
Either. Yeah. So I read ahead some for some JoJo's and now I'm just like so deep into it. The only ones I've not like either watched or read, I've not read part 6 and I've not read the current arc of part 8.
Okay. Yeah. I'm actually like I was keeping current with the show and then you actually said, hey, if you want to keep reading, here's a place you might be able to look into that. So,
Are there a Steel Ball Run?
No, I actually, I was going to read them in order from that point because four had just finished and I got a little ways into part five.
Yeah.
And reading it on my phone was the pits and I hated it because
it was so hard.
Yeah, because it's not
so hard
like
to tell what's going on. There's like so many things happening on the page.
It's not like reading a comic on Comixology where it's like zooming panel to panel for you, and it's all like you're like manually zooming and panning on the page.
Yeah, it's pretty rough.
Yeah, so I read a pretty good chunk, but they're actually catching up to where I had read in the anime now. So I don't really have any regrets as having dropped off of that. But now when this season ends, I'm like, oh, I'm probably gonna have to go find those again because I'm gonna want to read part six.
Yeah, I don't. So far, it seems to be they're making a few changes in part five that are like good changes. I think they're like changing the order of some, like revealing something. They're doing a good job. They're doing a really good job with part five, I think. So I'm enjoying it a lot
so far.
It's so wild.
All right. So, Kieran, anything before we hop into this proper?
Like, do I have any? Are you trying to ask me if I have any fun facts?
I am trying to ask you, if you have any
because
fun
you didn't
facts.
Frame it like that, so I didn't know what you were.
Or if you had any books you'd read this week that you wanted to talk about.
Oh no! Though I will say, Christmas period, or no, this is the New Year period. So just after the Christmas period, go and pick up your comics from your comic book shop because a lot of people order comics over Christmas and they don't pick them up because it's the holidays.
Yeah,
but your comic book shop. They're run by people as well, and they really need you to pick up their comics because that's how they get
their
money.
That's how you make money.
And it's how they buy presents for their poor, starving children. They have to go to the workhouses because people don't pick up their fucking comics.
Right.
So and make sure you do that.
Because it's the end of the year, they're going to have their taxes coming up, so they're really going to need that money.
Don't remind me.
Yeah. Taxes, the worst thing ever made. Okay. So, we're going to get into this. So, Kieran, do you have any fun facts for us about JoJo's Bizarre Adventure Battle Tendency?
Funny you should ask me, Jonah, on this podcast. So, JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, Part 2, Battle Tendency, originally titled His Proud Lineage. It was originally published.
Not as good of a title.
No, not at all.
It's pretty bad. it's not good. It was originally published all the way back in 1987.
That's the year I was born. 1989.
Really? Holy shit. Jonah, how old were you in 1987?
I was 7.
Man, Rocky's been cranking out.
I should not have been reading this then.
Yeah, no.
No. JoJo's Bizarre Adventure is written and drawn by Hirohiko Araki, who made his debut in 1980 with a one-shot called Poker Under Arms and basically went from there, eventually making JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, which was published weekly until 2004, until he just decided to go monthly because he's like, I just don't want to do it that much. Like, because I can't keep up.
Too, his art has gotten a lot more detailed, like as he's gotten along. So I imagine it's a lot more work now. It was still pretty detailed. Like Battle Tendency is really detailed.
Yeah, it's kind of insane how much detail is in some of the panels. Like,
yeah,
especially when there's only like two sentences, and so it's like if you're reading it quickly, you're gonna miss so much like detail.
But he basically has just continued to do JoJo's Bizarre Adventure since then, which is still ongoing and currently has 122 individual volumes, which is pretty crazy.
Yeah.
And has sold over 100 million copies. So pretty popular. Two little fun things that he did. In 2009, he actually did a part of an exhibit for the Louvre in Paris. He was selected as one of, I think it was like five or six comic artists to do part of an exhibition in the Louvre, which was kind of cool. And he also did a comic and like a sort of exhibition for a Gucci store in Shinjuku in 2011. And I have found the comic that he did with Gucci, but I have not had a chance to read it. But apparently it's very good, and it stars Rohan Kishibe from Diamond is Unbreakable. So,
who's essentially a Rocky self-insert, by the way?
Oh, 1,000%. 1,000%. Yeah.
I highly recommend looking up the Gucci ads. They're like really good.
Yeah. His like full color art.
Oh my God. It's incredible.
It's so amazing.
All the art books of the JoJo art books are like so. That's the thing that I would like to own. I should put on my like wish list because they're beautiful. Like his art, and it's really so funny to see his newer art versus like Battle Tendency or like you know Phantom Blood era. Like
Phantom Blood,
very very different art style.
Yes. And then I also found this quote from him. I cannot tell you where it is from, but I think I picked it up from an article that I found on Twitter that someone else had retweeted. And so this is from him. This is about like kind of why he wanted to be a cartoonist, why he wanted to be a manga author. And he said, "In my childhood, I heard all kinds of rumors about being a cartoonist. I heard they can just ask anyone to get naked when they're drawing models of men or women. And there's a person who gives out ideas and can give them from anywhere in the world. Every fourth day of the week, their night shift is spent golfing and playing on a yacht. And cartoonists secretly keep a real handgun in their basements. How much truth is there in all of this? I can't tell you."
So I'm pretty sure that's like he would do little like sketches and like have a little like note from the artist like in the in each manga. And I think that's either from part five or from Steel Ball Run. I can't remember. But he just has like the most bizarre little like, I'm going to write a weird thing because I can in like each manga. Like, here it is. Here's me. Hirohiko Araki.
That just reminds me of someone in an interview asked him like, how come dogs always get hurt in your comics? And he's just like, do they? That's the entire, like, no follow-up.
That's the entire sorry, one more thing. Like, I need to, like, let us actually talk about this, but Araki is just such a, like, insane person. There's a character in part five, Fugo, who has very crazy pants that have lots of holes in them, and, like, someone, like, asked him about it. Like, hey, like, what's up with all these holes? Like, what kind of underwear does he have on? And he's like, well, he's probably wearing a thong. I think he has to be considering all the holes you've put in his pants and that you can see his ass. It's right there.
The whole ass.
Yeah.
Okay. So do we want to get into volume one or you got more for me, Karen?
That's all I've got. That's all right. I'm tapping out.
Okay, cool. Well, without further ado, I guess we will jump into volume one of JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, Part 2, Battle Tendency. And in Volume 1, it opens in the winter of 1938. So this is actually two generations removed from the characters in the original, because this is the grandson of Jonathan. And he actually made a point in here saying how on the cover of this collected volume and in some of the early panels, he is wearing goggles, like flight goggles. And he's like, well, it was set when flight was new. So it's like JoJo. And this is kind of obsessed with that whole look. And he wanted to make him look the same, but kind of differentiate him personality wise from the original. So if you've read the first part, you'll very quickly find out that this JoJo is kind of the opposite personality.
Quite
different. Yeah, because he's not like a piece of white bread with like unsalted butter on him. Sorry, I'm a Jonathan hater. He kind of sucks.
Yeah, so we catch up with the best character from part one, which is Robert E.O. Speedwagon.
Yeah, boy, Speedwagon.
In the meantime, Speedwagon has become a oil magnet. And is a like multi-bajillionaire and
a philanthropist.
So this weird street urchin guy that JoJo befriended in the first one that used his hat that was made of razor blades to fight people with is now this wealthy investor scientist.
In America.
So he started the Speedwagon Foundation, which is a recurring thing that keeps coming back throughout all of JoJo's. So this is where that gets started.
It's Rocky's like Deus Ex Machina. Like, we gotta get the Speedwagon Foundation in here to fix something. Yep.
And it does also allow for the consistent thing of the Joestars always somehow have like a connection with lots of money, which is how they can do all the globetrotting like story arcs without people questioning it.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, well, their family comes from money, or oh, the Speedwagon Foundation donated this plane or whatever. So it just is easy shorthand for getting out of. How did they get around this whole money problem?
Speedwagon Foundation. Don't
worry about it. Yeah, exactly.
Gotta get those Speedwagon dollars.
And so the Speedwagon Foundation has discovered a Mexican pyramid where there are a bunch of the stone masks from the first part, which if you aren't familiar, the stone masks are what are put on people to turn them into vampires. You put on the mask and then put blood on the mask and then these spikes go into your face and then you're a vampire?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's how it works.
That's how vampires work. Yeah, and but more importantly, there is a man who is part of the stone column. Some sort of pillar man, if you will.
you might call him a pillar man.
What a name.
So Speedwagon has contacted an old friend from part one, and I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing this right. Strezo?
Is that? It is, but do you know what it is? Also,
I don't know what it actually is.
It's Straits, as in Dire Straits.
Okay.
As in Dire Straits.
Because there's Dire and Straits in part one. Okay. So, but they say Strezo.
See, I'm so used to reading the new translations. They don't have the real names of all these characters, which is frustrating.
Yeah. They don't do it in the anime either. They'll say, like, not the real thing. And it's like, but I can clearly hear you saying Crazy Diamond.
Or Oingo Boingo. I can hear you saying Oingo Boingo.
What?
Yeah. Anyway. It's so weird.
So if you didn't know, a lot of the character names and later stand names are named after bands and songs and stuff, but because they didn't want to get sued when they translated it, they changed a lot of them.
Yeah.
For the US, or just English, I mean, release.
But you can figure it out if you think about it.
Yeah. If you listen to the dub, if you're watching the subtitled version,
you can
hear in Japanese what they're actually called. But anyway, he meets his old pal Strezo in Mexico, and because that's the guy who fought Dio with them, the guy that was the vampire in part one, if you aren't familiar. And he's like, well, they use this thing called Heyman energy, which is basically like sunlight but it's in like energy form, in rippled energy form. And they use like a breathing
technique.
The magic
of the ripples.
Yeah. So this guy is like, he still looks way younger because he's like this, you know, Zen master guy of this fighting art. And, he suddenly turns on them all and kills Speedwagon's associates and badly injures Speedwagon. And we find out that he's actually completely obsessed with the whole, like, staying young forever by being a vampire thing that he got to witness Dio doing. So he is completely betrayed all of his friends immediately within the first, like, couple chapters here.
Which, like, fair enough. Like, if I saw Dio, it's like, Dio's hot as hell. I want to be hot as hell forever.
Forever? Yeah. I mean, what do I have to sacrifice? A bunch of other people?
My friends? Done.
Whatever. Yeah.
He uses the blood he spilled from killing all of the other Speedwagon Foundation dudes to activate the mask and turn himself into a vampire. And basically is just going like, hey, I'm going to be the one who lives forever and basically the new Dio. He's actually not very intimidating compared to Dio, I have to say, though.
He doesn't have the panache of Dio.
Yeah. Like, they try and kind of set him up like he's going to be, but it just never quite worked for me as well.
He's pretty hot when he gets young again, though, because mostly he kind of looks like a girl, and I like that.
And that is the most important part about being a vampire, is like, how hot are you?
Yeah, like, if you're not gonna be a hot vampire, like, just get out of here. I'm done with you.
Yeah, I mean, like, honestly, if you're not gonna be hot while killing me with a steamroller,
then I'd rather not even bother.
Yeah, just don't.
I mean, how do the vampires in Interview with a Vampire rate for you guys? I mean, they have young Antonio Banderas, and
I've actually never seen that film, but
okay. I've not seen it either.
That's a large gap in there's a lot of movies I've not seen in my life.
That one is still fun, but really cheesy nowadays. So
fun fact,
Jennifer,
right? He's a vampire.
Yeah, he's like the main dude. He's stat.
He's the vampire.
He's the main dude. Yeah. No, he's actually not. Brad Pitt is the vampire giving the interview, but Lestat is who turned him into a vampire, and he's who he kind of goes through time with. And baby Kirsten Dunst is like their adopted daughter. Basically, it's like they're like her dad's once they turn her into a vampire.
This sounds very homoerotic. Maybe I should
watch
this.
It is very homoerotic, and I definitely recommend it. It's a good movie in that it's a fun but dumb movie.
That's what I like.
Yep, no, I'm sold.
We are talking about it right now.
So then after this little betrayal of everything they hold dear, we get to meet the new JoJo. So Joseph Joestar is very different from his grandpa, who is the other JoJo we had met up to this point, and he encounters a couple of New York cops who are harassing a black kid because he's black, and Smokey, who's the kid, steals JoJo's wallet, and he's just like, whatever, he doesn't actually care, you know, he has other money, it's not the biggest deal in the world.
I've got those Speedwagon dollars.
Yeah, exactly. The real problem is that he finds these racist cops, like, beating the crap out of Smokey, so he turns the tables on them and uses his Heyman power to, like, break one of their fingers with a bottle cap and do all kinds of crazy stuff.
He shoots the guy's finger into his nose.
Well, that cop put a booger on his face, so, like...
This is true.
Oh, no, I mean, like, it's totally justified.
Like, yeah. They got what was coming to them, and they were racist, so sorry, racist cops, that's what you get.
Exactly. I also appreciate
put on people.
That the really big fat one, I mean, his face just was drawn as a pig, essentially.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. These cops are just horrifically disgusting.
So disgusting looking. Anyone can draw, like, an ugly face like a Rocky can. Like, just the most hideous. Like, the only thing I can think that, like, can also, like, the only, like, artist is the, oh my God, now my brain, Kentaro Miura, that does Berserk, also draws a real good ugly face.
Yeah. I actually was wondering with Araki's art if he had any like Western influence on how he draws, like, not the super handsome people, because they feel like like thugs from, like, a, you know, like a Batman comic or something.
Oh, absolutely. It's like big face and, like, nose.
Exactly. So we find out a little bit about Erina Joestar, who's still alive from part one, and how Joseph is, like, that's the one person in the world that if he thinks she's going to be upset with him, he'll, like, do whatever he has to make her happy, which is kind of, like, the dichotomy of his character is, like, this is going to make her mad at me. I better stop.
Like, no, Granny Arena. I also love that, like, Arena is, like, such a, like, a bland character in part one, but she actually rules in Battle Tendency. Just like this fucking mean, like, badass grandma.
Yes, that's another reason this one's so much better.
Yeah.
but as pretty quickly, Strezzo, knowing, you know, that there's JoJo's still around, he confronts him immediately because he's like, well, this is the other family who has, you know, knowledge of the Heyman
Of the Hamon. I think they pronounce it Hamon.
Do they? Okay.
In the anime, I think they do, which is like Hamon.
Hamon.
I don't know if that's right or what. I feel like I have a memory of them saying Hamon. Or maybe that just that's like a worm in my brain now. I don't know.
I was going to say, that's fair, because I'm notoriously bad at pronouncing things. But the best part about this battle
anyway
is how he's like, oh, I'm here to fight you. And JoJo's reaction was to pull out a Tommy gun and just shoot him 1,000 times.
Oh, my God. Yeah, it's so good. It's so good. He's like, what are you doing? He's like, I knew you were coming for me, so I prepared this in advance.
Right.
And he also has grenades as well.
Yes, he has like a dozen grenades.
Yeah.
But he finds out the hard way that the vampires will just kind of reform, even if you've blown them into a million tiny vampire pieces. it doesn't buy him as much time as I would have hoped, blowing a vampire up into like 1,000 pieces.
Yeah.
But,
and the most important part is that Strezzo does look very sexy no matter how many pieces he's in.
He does. He's so hot.
It also makes him nude for the rest of this fight.
Which is good.
So, it wasn't specifically necessarily this part. It was actually more the Pillar Men. But, like, do you ever just, like, read a comic and you just know, like, the person drawing this is so horny right now. Like,
that is
100% of JoJo. Like,
yeah.
Just nude, glistening buttocks for, like, no reason at all.
Oh, yeah, for chapters on end.
For chapters on end of buttocks and large muscular thighs and shoulder muscles. And necks, huge necks.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, as you said, it's definitely more pronounced with the Pillarman, but there are just, like, whole panels where you go, there is no logical, practical, or reasonable reason for you to be standing posed like this other than the person who drew you is horny as hell and wants to see
just
that
lovingly rendered beefcake, like, throughout.
Okay, so, like, you know the annoying American trope of all the women superheroes on the cover having, they're turned in such a way where their spine is basically snapped in half so you can see boobs and butt at the same time. If you want Beefcake men drawn in a very similar way, you need to read JoJo's, is what I'm trying to tell you.
It's so just
The level of contortion is like, how could someone with muscles that big be that flexible? That's my question.
I posted a screenshot of a thing on Twitter of it, and someone was like, is his arm supposed to be like that? I'm like, man, you know what? I'm so desensitized to JoJo that I didn't even notice that the arm was fucked up.
Did you ever see that screenshot from one of the games where it was 3D models, but the kind where they're made to look like, you know, the anime? And it's Zappelli doing, from this arc, doing the hand down over his head thing.
Yep.
And they had to, like, grab and stretch his arm out all crazy. So they showed it, like, zoomed out to show you, like, how much they had to contort them 3D model to make it even pose like that. It was amazing. They had basically had to like stretch and squish like parts of the arm to stretch it out like taffy to get it to go into those poses.
It's just very refreshing to see men pinched and pushed and shoved into these little positions. It's really nice.
So so he has a big final confrontation with Strezzo on the, I'm guessing, the Brooklyn Bridge. Was that what they were supposed to be on? They
never
explicitly say, but it seems like that's what they were going for. And he is able to defeat Strezzo. I'm trying to remember exactly what the move, like what he did.
He kidnaps a lady and Joseph pretends to like not care.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. He calls the lady ugly.
Her ugly. Right. I don't even remember exactly what happened, actually. And I like literally just read this like not that long
same
ago.
Same here. I read it last night and I'm like, wait, what exactly did he do to win? Because it's like such a blur. That so part here's the other
thing.
Fast.
Here's the other thing about JoJo. Like when you're reading it and you're like, wait, this doesn't make any sense. Yeah, it doesn't. You just got to let it wash over you. It doesn't matter.
Oh, yeah.
Like, why does JoJo have a Tommy gun? He just fucking does. Get over it. It's just how it is.
Yeah. Okay, so Strezzo has a power that is basically one he observed from Dio, where he shoots, like, blood out of his eyes.
That's right.
Like, stinky eye or something. It calls it's really like weird.
Projectiles. So JoJo charges a shot glass with Hamon, or Hamon, and it reflects back at him and hits him in the head. And
he shoots his space ripper stingy eyes.
Yeah, that's stingy eyes.
Yep. That's a thing. And that's how he's able to get the one over on
logically.
It's pretty bad. I mean, not bad, like good bad. Like it's so dumb, but I love it.
It's so stupid that you're just like, okay, sure.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Yeah,
let's go with it.
There's been much dumber things in American comics we've covered. So I definitely am on board with all the dumb stuff that happens in these
books. And there's so much more.
After this battle, we find out that basically Strezzo had to dump the bodies after everything because he noticed that the blood was being absorbed by the Pillar Man that was in that cave. So Speedwagon, his body being dumped into a river, he wasn't actually dead. So turns out that, he's been kidnapped by Nazis because it's 1938.
Because, okay. Of course.
Do we want to talk about the Nazis now?
Oh, boy.
There's some problematic Nazi content in this army of JoJo.
Yes. It is definitely probably the biggest strike against it, I would say.
It's not great.
No.
I actually rereading this part, I was like, wait a second. Is Caesar friends with Nazis? Like, I didn't really.
Yeah.
I think they de-emphasized that in the anime, but like, or maybe I just was like glossed over it myself, but they have quote unquote sympathetic Nazis for sure in this arc. And it's not
great. It's not the best.
I will say, I feel that's about the most egregious that JoJo gets. Like, I don't feel like anything else like that happens again in the series. It's really just this chunk that has Nazis for some reason. Like, no, why?
Yeah, it is very bizarre I don't believe in any of the other parts there is anything else quite like this. But for some reason, Battle Tendency just has Nazis, not just in this volume, but in like all of the other volumes.
There's
the
like
Nazis play like key roles.
Yeah. Oh boy. Yeah. It's a problem. He gets better over time, so I can like. Well, I will. And it was written in like 1987, so it's like okay.
Yeah. Exactly.
It's old.
I'm sorry. It just reminds me of there's a old Japanese sci-fi movie on an episode of Mystery Science Theater they watch, where when the UFOs are flying by and blowing up random buildings, one of the buildings just has a giant picture of Hitler on it. And so they're like, oh no, not the Hitler building. Where will children go for all their Hitler toys and games? And that's all I can ever think of now when I see Nazis portrayed in anything.
In the anime, I know this is about the comic book, but like in the anime, when the like Nazis are around, the music that plays is like so insane. Also, it's like so dramatic. Like,
It's crazy. So back to the story. Yeah. So these Nazis have a secret base in the desert where they have extracted the Pillar Man, and Stroheim, who's the lead Nazi that we become. Oh, he kind of becomes part of their group in a way.
Parts of him.
He names this, so it's supposed to be Santana.
Yeah.
But if you have the current translation, it's Santviento for some reason.
Yeah.
So that's that. But basically what they're doing is they're trying to figure out the secret of how to like extract the power from the Pillar Man, and they don't really know anything about it, because they just kind of know of the masks and stuff, because it's kind of the whole Indiana Jones thing where it's supposed to be like the Nazis are obsessed with the occult and they're trying to figure out any way they can to gain power and all that. And so they make one of these prisoners they have into a vampire and put him in with the Pillar Man. And at first they're like, oh, that's just biting him, so the vampires are just going to take him over. And that's when we find out that the Pillar Men are somehow like the people who created the stone masks and are absorbing. He just absorbs the vampire into him. So it's like they set up this whole mythology where the vampires are like sent out to eat people, and then they come back, and then the Pillar Men eat them, and that's how they get their energy.
Classic.
Because every cell in their body can absorb and break down the blood. It's very strange, and I have to say, it's so uniquely weird. I've not seen anyone try and copy that. In the same way, anything that even kind of has stands, like Persona, you're like, that's from JoJo's.
Also, a thing I love about Araki is that he'll get deep in this, like, all right, like, I figured out this whole mythology, the stone mask and him on. And then, like, later he's like, you know what? Forget that shit. I'm going to do something else now. Drop it and abandon it and do a new weird thing.
Oh, yeah. That definitely happens between parts 3 and 4 with the stands.
Yeah,
where he's like, oh, it's all related to tarot cards. No, it's not.
No, never mind. It's actually about a bow and arrow and aliens. That comes up.
That's a bit down the road.
Yeah.
But anyway, so at the end of this volume, JoJo has to find the hidden base, save Speedwagon, and defeat Santana, which is, I'm going to have to try and remember.
Jonah, stop. We're going to get sued.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Don't say the word Santana.
I only know that song. If you say it three times, he appeals. What was that?
Oh, the one, You're So Smooth, that one, Rob Thomas.
That's the one. Anyway, so they have their big battle, and JoJo is still untrained, but he's able to defeat Santana / Santviento. Yeah.
Santviento.
But basically by hitting him with the Haymon, what he finds out is essentially like the vampire or the Pillar Man's like natural ability is basically shielding him from the Haymon in the same way that Strezo had like this scarf that would like use like basically was like a lightning rod, which was why it was so hard to defeat him initially, but then within like 10 pages he's dead. And basically their entire body is designed that way, so he has to figure out a way to like really get in there. And like literally
just be absorbed just, by them.
Right. So he literally just gets in there by being partially absorbed, then exploding with Haymon, then dragging him up a flight of stairs to a doorway to get him out in the sun. And he still almost fails because the Pillar Man like goes inside Stroheim and tries to attack him that way. And they end up in a well. He's trying to hide in this well, but because Santana's never been in the sunlight, he doesn't know that at high noon it'll be like reflecting off the water in the well. It's very convoluted, and he turns to stone And he's defeated. So that's yeah.
Bye, Santana. We'll definitely never see you again.
So yeah, it's a weird ride. But what did you guys think of Jennifer? Why don't we start with you? What did you think of Volume One?
I actually was like pleasantly surprised by like how good the art was, and even in Volume One, I was like, mm-hmm. I think my memories of like old JoJo was that it was worse, and it was like actually it was pretty decent. Like mm-hmm. it's definitely dated. Like it's a yeah. product of its time, but like very detailed. I thought it was fun. Like the facial expressions are really good and expressive. Could do without the Nazis. Could have done without.
Yeah,
they're not that fair. Bad yet, because they're like the Nazis are like obviously bad. Although that there's like a whole thing of like, wow, you've got to really give it up for Stroheim for
right.
his dedication or yeah. whatever. And that yeah. that continues to some extent later. So I could do without that. But
yes,
there's also like zero women in it. There's like Arena, and that's in the lady, the random reporter, and that's like it.
Yeah, that is also an ongoing JoJo's problem.
It becomes better later. It does become right. better later, but like. You got to wait a while.
Right. Got to get through a few more parts before yeah. there's
oh, yeah.
anybody. Kieran, what did you think of Volume 1?
Yeah, I thought it was pretty damn good. I thought the art was really great. I think it's probably one of the strongest points about JoJo's is that like the art is so wild and crazy and just has like this, you know, very strong aesthetic to it. Again, could have done without the Nazis. That would have been it would have been
there.
Would have been great for that not to be there. But it really clips along at like at a really good pace, I have to say. Like there's no real like lulls in the story where I'm like, come on, like let's hurry it along here. Cause like it is basically like a shonen ish manga.
Oh yeah.
I don't know what exact genre it falls under.
I think it might technically be seinen, but it's like shonen to seinen, like somewhere in there.
Yeah.
I think
yeah.
later on, once he's not in just Shonen Jump anymore, Araki gets a little wilder and it becomes more seinen, I think.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But like let's say it's a shonen for the sake of this.
Okay.
But it's like there's no like massive lulls like that you sometimes get with shonen yeah. where like they're, you know, they're powering up or they're training or they're filling time or whatever. Everything that happens in here is like really happening for a reason
yeah.
and it's really kind of driving everything forward. So it's like it's a pretty decent sized book, but right. I finished it pretty quickly because like it goes along. So I really enjoyed it.
Right on. Yeah, I was very on board with this. I was very happy to be rereading it. I've read the books. I've seen the show. I think I've seen this season probably like 3 times at this point. And it's, yeah, minus the whole Nazi thing again.
That's like a given, like, of course.
Yeah, I know. But it actually kind of reiterated to me why I'm such a Joseph fan, because mm-hmm. He's just so, like, weird. He's like, because he's a weird combination of, like, he's this like the classic anime trope of the hero who's kind of a ditz, who's like, mm-hmm. oh, I don't know what's going on. But secretly he does. Like that's kind of an act with this guy.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes it's not. It's like.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Sometimes he is just a huge dumbass.
I also love when his like response is like, well, I have used up my entire arsenal. So my action is going to be to run away right now.
Yes,
bye.
Exactly.
Yep.
He's not afraid to run away. He mostly gets really upset when people insult his grandma.
Hates it.
And I do love his whole thing where then in other times he's Sherlock Holmes for some reason where he's like, oh, well, I knew because yeah. your coat didn't have anything on it, but you're so clearly you put it in your back pocket.
Oh,
because,
my God.
Yeah. And he just like goes through this whole Sherlock Holmes detective thing of like knowing exactly where a person had stashed their brass knuckles before they got in a fight with him. So I love this version of JoJo. Like I was so happy that he came back for part 3 when I mm-hmm. first started watching that. And he doesn't quite get to shine in much in that one because he's not the main character. But when they do bring back his things where he's like, your next line is going to be this, I would always get so happy.
It's so good.
Yeah, it's really good.
He also arguably gets even hotter in part 3, which is how it's is somehow, it even possible?
Oh my goodness. Yes.
So, all right. Ugh. So, Kieran, do you want to take part 2?
Okay, so they all head off to Rome and they all head off to Rome and JoJo hits up with one of Speedwagon's contacts in Italy, who is Caesar Antonio Zeppoli, who is the grandson of Will Antonio Zipoli, who is from part one. So they don't really get along because Caesar's like, you're an untrained dumbass. You won against Santana.
I'm such a ladies' man. Look at me with my weird fucking hat in this restaurant.
He's so cool and he eats spaghetti and stuff. And this is also the part where they have like a little Hammond competition. JoJo puts a pigeon in a woman's mouth and it's the greatest thing I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
So, I mean, God, it's so hard not to say. It's so bizarre because then you're just playing right into it. But it is.
But it is.
It's so appropriately named.
Yeah. I think like when I was watching the anime for the first time and I got up to this part where they had their little competition and because Caesar, like, he wins and then he's going to go and like kiss this woman that he's been wooing and he's like, now, you know, where were we? And then just like her mouth just opened, this pigeon just like... And this pigeon just flies out. And JoJo's like, I knew you were going to go to kiss her, so I slipped a pigeon in there. I was like, What?
Yep. That, you know, that normal thing you do is putting a pigeon in someone's mouth.
Yeah.
And the thing is, like, is Rocky the kind of person that's like, I'm going to do some weird shit? Or is he just, like, sincere about this? Like, this is what's in his brain?
I
tend towards that. I think this is, like... His sincere,
I think,
like,
so.
Yeah, I came up with a great idea, and it's this.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, 100%. But we also see that the Pillar Men underneath Rome are now waking up, which is a bad thing. So,
they're so
Joseph, they are so strong and so hot.
They're so nude.
Then JoJo, Speedwagon, Caesar, and also Caesar's Nazi friend, who, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Now we'll gloss over him. That was weird. So they arrive at the underground cave where the Pillar Men are. And so the Pillar Men, who are Wamu, AC/DC, and Kars, have already awakened and killed all of the Nazis who were trying to, like, you know, steal their Pillar Man powers. Mm-hmm. And so JoJo and Caesar confront the Pillar Men and they're like, you know, bring it on. But the Pillar Men already know what Hammond uses are and basically, like, kick their ass.
Kick
their asses, I guess. As Wamu is about to deal a mortal blow to Joseph, he promises him that with a month of training, JoJo could make a worthy adversary. And he's like, I could, you know, give me a month and I could take you on. I bet you. And so because he loves to battle, he accepts and implants a wedding ring of death on JoJo's aorta.
Stupid.
It's so fucking stupid.
I love it. Yeah.
And so he's like, you know, this is going to dissolve into poison in 33 days. And the antidote is in my lip ring, obviously. And so then AC/DC is like, shit, man, this seems real cash.
I love
I'm
it.
Get on this as well. And puts another ring inside Joseph's windpipe with the antidote in his nose
ring.
Mm-hmm. And then Kars, who is the leader and is very cool, he is too cool to take part of this. And he's like, let's get out of here. We got to find the Red Stone of Arja. That's a plot point. Mm-hmm. That's a plot point.
I just have to say that, what do they call that thing? The MacGuffin.
Yes,
the MacGuffin. I like how.
Oh, yeah.
Why does JoJo's Bizarre Adventure need a MacGuffin? Because it really doesn't.
It's
but
super
the fact that it,
one.
It also not. Piles a MacGuffin on top of all this other insanity.
And they even address the MacGuffin later. Like,
right.
JoJo's like, why don't you just destroy it? And Lisa's like, I can't because of a prophecy.
Right. Yeah, she literally does not give a decent explanation as to why she needs to destroy it. She's like, I just know that one day I will need it. And he's like, I don't think that's a good answer.
But okay.
Yeah,
weird flex, but okay. And so then basically at the end of that, Caesar's like, you know, I can really respect your kind of heroic efforts here. Let's go and train more in Hammond. And Jennifer, if you're right, I'm going to turn it over
to
you because
So Caesar takes Joseph to beautiful Venice to meet his mentor, and I love this scene because you see this like person wearing like a spooky mask or like a weird like festival mask on a thing, and you're like, whoa, who's this gonna be, guys? It turns out it's a hot lady. It's Lisa, she's so hot. And
Lisa's
like,
probably my favorite character.
Lisa's really good.
She's awesome.
And Caesar's like, it's my master. And Joseph's like, what? This hot lady's your master? Oh my God, it's crazy. Lisa takes Joseph and Caesar to her weird island where she hangs out.
Yeah, her island palace.
It's called something really crazy, like air Salompas or that. I think that's Air Salompas is like a sport spray that they use in IQ. I'm pretty sure it's something like that. So she takes them to her island and she's like, all right, I know this manga has been pretty gay so far, but how about we add to it and make you two boys climb up a big oily phallic pillar together. And also, let's strap a BDSM looking mask to your face.
Oh my God, Joseph, yes.
On top of that. Yeah, so Lisa is trying to train them more in Hamon, so she makes Joseph wear the mask to control his breathing so he can get the rhythm better. And they have to climb up this oily pillar using their Hamon powers. And it's very difficult, but they do eventually it. And I think that Caesar and Joseph like really bond. Like they like actually
they do.
By the time they get to the top of that tower, they like care for each other.
Yeah. They should kiss.
It's beautiful.
I you cannot convince me that they haven't. Like literally like, this is one of those things. There's like a cover. Actually, I'm just gonna like send it in the chat real quick right now to you. Cause I just cannot imagine like watching and reading JoJo and being like, this is straight. It's no. Oh,
like I am all for people interpreting art and media however they want. You know, as soon as you put something out there, it's up to people how they wanna take it. If you try and say that JoJo's is straight, you are incorrect.
Like you are a fool and you know nothing.
It's a bad interpretation.
It's not the picture's not coming through right now for some reason, but it's literally just Caesar and Joseph like cheek to cheek embracing each other for on the cover. So they do training and they continue to do more training with Lisa's minions, Loggins and Messina. So who's Jody Messina and Kenny Loggins, I think is who they're referencing. I really like how this part was drawn in the manga too, where you see like the days like ticking forward while they're doing different training things. And,
And it's just like, it is very good because obviously like it's a month of training and you know in another shonen manga perhaps you would maybe get another couple chapters out of that training because
but
you
they
know,
just like
it's like only a few pages
real quick
and
like lickety split
and they're done. Yeah,
I appreciate it. So while this training is happening, Lisa's telling them about you know the Pillar Men and the Stone Mask, blah, blah. And we learn more about the Red Stone of Asia that she is in her possession. And that is what it's like a super Asia. Because I guess the other ones are not powerful enough. So this is the one that the Pillar Men like really, really want. Mm-hmm. And Lisa has it.
So what they really, really want. So tell me what you want.
They really, really want it so bad. With the battle.
It's like
Spice Girl. Is a stand later in
JoJo. I knew that was a stand. I was like, I don't actually know if this is a stand, but I feel like
it is. It's totally a stand.
It had to be.
So there's about a week left of their training, and Lisa is like, all right, guys, it is time for your final test. Time for you both to fight Loggins and Messina one-on-one. But uh-oh, something bad is going on. There's two dudes hanging out. Who's that? Oh, it's AC/DC. And already killed Loggins. No.
No, Loggins, my favorite character.
Loggins, wasn't part of the deal. One of you is wearing a hat, and I can't remember which one it is. AC/DC knows about the super agent now, and Joseph tries to battle AC/DC, but the Pillar Man's just too fucking strong for him. He cannot. Oh, this is such a weird fight also. So AC/DC uses sled. Wait, Joseph. Oh, right. We didn't even talk about Joseph's like clacker things that he's got going on. So Caesar fights with bubbles.
That's right. Right. Yeah, Caesar fights with bubbles. Yeah.
Let's Joseph take a step back for a second.
And Joseph fights with balls.
Yep.
Swinging balls.
Mm-hmm.
As if this manga could not.
As if it wasn't gay enough.
If it wasn't gay enough, Joseph loves to fight with balls. So I think Joseph does the whole like swiggity swaggity with the balls and like gets AC/DC all wrapped up. And it seems like maybe it's a fatal blow and he's going to get AC/DC's ring. And that's the end of volume 2. What's going to happen?
Dun, yeah, dun, exactly dun. That. As the audience, we see that he has, and how does he not notice, but he has this giant brain-looking thing attached to his back, like this huge-ass parasite thing. Yeah. And JoJo's just like, he's literally whistling. Like, he's walking away from the battle like,
you fool.
Like, I win, everything's fine. And yeah, it's a really cool fight though, because of the Hamon energy makes it so they can like walk on water and do all this cool stuff. So like
they're
balancing on these like tiny little spike like things that are sticking out of the water. Kind of like, you know, at a dock when you see like the pillar things coming out of the water, but they're sharp, like they're to the point. So they're having to walk across these and use the Hamon to make sure they don't like, you know, stab their feet. And you can see like even in one of the parts where he's like getting the upper hand on ACDC, he like actually gets him to like stumble and stabs his foot into one of those. So it's like, yeah, it's a pretty intense fight in that regard, but because it's still Joseph fighting a pillar man, it's still completely insane.
Yeah.
Like he wraps him up in wool that's soaked in water and like slices him up at one point, and there's just like really just stuff you don't see anywhere else.
And ACDC is the one that just starts crying, right? Like
he bursts into tears, and there's a whole page, not a panel, a page that is only his face like contorted with like like massive like anime tears just all over his face, and it is fantastic, especially because the very next page is him contorted into one of those like muscle poses crying, and I'm just like, I don't understand what is necessarily happening here, but I am very on board with it.
Yeah.
AC/DC just loves battles. They kind of go into that a bit, like where the reason he's allowed to even do the like bet for the giving him a month to train is because which one's the big boss? Cars?
Cars is the big boss, right? Yeah.
Yeah, where even he's like, well, he likes to battle so much, I guess I'll let him have his month before we kill
this guy. Wait, I think that's Whammo, actually, that likes to fight.
Oh, is that Whammo who's
But says, they okay, all fucking love I'm to wrong, fight. But
they all just love to get rowdy.
Except for Cars. Cars is like, I'm just gonna let y'all deal with this. I'm gonna hang out.
Right. But he lets his bros do their fighting that they love, so he's a pretty good boss to the other pillar man.
He's not a micromanager.
Right, exactly.
What a good dude.
Yeah. He just wants to take over the entire world. What's wrong with that?
No problem.
Nothing.
All right. So volume 2, I guess I'll start with thoughts on volume 2. And I think the getting more into how the Hamon energy is used within their actual, like, I don't know, they kind of get a little bit more into like how it can be used in interesting ways in this volume, which I really liked. They didn't dive into that as much in the part one. It was just like, use a punch, but it has that on it.
Yeah. Or
you know, it was pretty basic stuff compared to this. And this is really where Araki, like, you could tell he probably just had a giant list where he thought of like, okay, what is anything I can think of that revolves around moisture in some way that I could use to channel this energy through, because it just gets so buck wild. That I really enjoyed this volume because I think this is where the series as a whole really ramps up is the second volume. Like, this is where the breaks are just completely disconnected for the rest of the entire run of JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. What did you guys think?
Yeah, I really like this volume because Joseph and Caesar start to like actually like bond and like care about each other. And I really like that. Like when the whole like pillar scene where like in the end, Caesar like grabs Joseph so that he doesn't like fall down, because he is like, oh, I actually respect you now. Like think that you're not just a dumbass, like you actually are really brave and like have some cool ideas. And I feel like that sets up things really well for later on. I always just like, I don't like action purely for the sake of action. I want to care about characters. So yeah,
that's fair.
I think this volume gets deeper into that, to caring about the characters. And that's Lisa Lisa's in it, and I love her.
Yes, that's true. I think that's why stuff like car chases to me have always been so boring.
Oh, I like Paul's.
Because there's no like character involvement, unless it's something that does it incredibly well, like Baby Driver. There's like, I don't know, never those stakes as like a face to face fight like in these books.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kieran, any other thoughts on this before we move on?
It was great. I think this is a really, really good volume. As you said, you know, you get a little more of the relationship between Caesar and JoJo. But I think more than that, I think what I really enjoyed was that, like, this is kind of the point where there's less kind of heed paid to, like, oh, you know, what rules have I set up about Hamon? What rules have I set up about, like, how, like, the breathing and the vampires and stuff work? And instead, this is just kind of this, like, this unbridled kind of creativity going through everything that they're doing. You know, it's like, okay, they're going to go to Venice and there's going to be a hot lady, and she has a palace, and there's a pillar, and it's the oil, and they're fighting on spikes, and they're balancing, and it's just like, like, none of this necessarily makes, like, logical sense, quote-unquote,
sure.
But it is incredibly fun, and it's really interesting to, like, read, and it's almost compelling in a way, because you're just like, I want to see where, like, it's going to ramp up to the next time.
Yeah.
Could you imagine having been reading this chapter to chapter back then, too? Like, there's no way you wouldn't just be like, give me the next part right now.
Oh, yeah. It's like, I think, like, I enjoyed volume one, and, but I think this one is so much more compelling than the previous one, just because, like, it's now very difficult to predict what's going to happen next. So,
yeah.
Top stuff, mate.
Okay, so we're going to wrap it up there for this episode, but we'll be back next week to cover volumes 3 and 4. Because as I was looking at the notes, I realized volume 4 is, like, way longer than some of these other ones.
Yeah,
were,
that I makes feel sense. Like.
So there's a lot more to cover. But Jennifer, where can people find you online?
Oh, you can find me at Jennifer Cheek on Twitter, where I do often talk about JoJo.
Yes. But you may have a podcast you want to plug.
That's also important. Yeah, I am on
You may Drugs be on Dragons. A podcast network
I'm
that we're
literally
part of.
Wearing a shirt of it right now. Yeah. So I'm on the Geekly Podcast Network, and I'm on Drugs and Dragons. Been running for 6 fucking years of Dungeons and Dragons. And also, Cast of Thrones will be back in, like, April, because Game of Thrones is coming back for final season. Weird. True. That's where you find me.
When does the new show start?
We've got to get our lives together, man. It's so hard to record.
We can cut that part.
We've got, like, 3 in the bank, but we've got to get them all, like, edited and, like, get some more. But
that's
it's,
fair. I didn't know if you wanted to, if it was coming soon enough to plug, though. I just wanted to throw it out there. Okay.
Depends on what
we can have
out.
Logan cut that out.
That's fine. No, we're going to make a show called Dear Internet where we talk about internet advice. I am constantly just trolling the internet to find weird shit that people ask on there to talk about for this. I love it. It's going to happen. It's just that, did you know that recording a podcast with multiple adults is just really difficult to do?
Yeah, it's strange.
I maintain that no one's actually ever done it.
It's not possible.
it's actually just a lie every time. This isn't real.
Oh,
it's, I mean, there's a famous piece of advice we were given by a very smart man named Michael DeMauro, and his advice was, podcasts are misery. Don't do a podcast.
Yeah.
Says the man with many podcasts.
Yes.
Well, yeah.
Okay, cool. Well, Kieran, where can people find you?
You can find me on the internet. Twitter, not the internet, at Mr. K_Bennett, or you can check out my Dungeons and Dragons podcast, which is for grits and giggles. That is at @4CNGpodcast on Twitter. Jonah, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me on twitter.com. I am at Spambot, and I also run, well, we both do, but I try and, like, take some of the responsibility for running, like, the Twitter that we have for the show, twitter.com/inksandissues, because Kieran is awesome and does a lot of the scheduling and stuff. So full props to you for taking on that massive, huge pain in the ass, which is scheduling a podcast.
That is a job unto itself.
Need more mutants, metahumans, and monsters in your life? Then check out these other Geekly Ink shows like Transformation Sequence, Cthulhu and Friends, and Drunks and Dragons. Help us make the show the best that it can be by supporting us at patreon.com/inksandissues, where you can get bonus content, early access to episodes, and can even vote on comics for us to review. Don't forget to leave a 5-star review to help us spread the word. Interact with us on Twitter at @inksandissues or on Twitch at twitch.tv/inksandissues. Now do yourself a favor and go read some gosh dang comics. And with that, we will see you all next time. Goodbye.
Woo-hoo. Bye. I love you. Susan, my-